Father, thanks so much for our time together, for what we anticipate will be our last lesson in this series, and thank you for the series as a whole, for its value, for not leaving us in the dark when it comes to families and parenting, and we pray as well for wisdom as we wrap this material up and consider some last minute examples, and just thank you for those who are able to come today, and pray for those who weren't able to. Well, we are going through a series of fictitious or real examples. I've got one written one, and I've got a couple of videos that we'll go to after that, so I'll go ahead and pass these out. If I could maybe get you to pass them out. My man Ethan's not here this morning, so... Let you all get your copy there. Thank you, sir. All right, just a short one. And this is actually an introductory paragraph to a Roseman article. I didn't reproduce the Roseman article. He has things to say about it and so forth, but since we're just making our own way through this and giving our own opinions, I didn't bother to give you his. I'm just going to give you the story that opened up his article, and this is what it is right here. Teen son with average grades. Our 17-year-old son is an unmotivated student. A junior in high school, he's clearly capable of making straight A's, but typically makes B's and C's. He plays on both the football and tennis teams, but is a standout at neither. He thinks kids who use drugs and play video games are stupid, and his friends are all good kids, most of whom make better grades. He's polite, well-mannered, and respectful. Other adults rave about what an impressive kid he is. Meanwhile, we're pulling our hair out. We've talked to him many times about the fact that his grades are eliminating lots of college options, but it's in one ear and out the other. We've taken away his driving privileges, his cell phone, he doesn't even have a smartphone, and even threatened to cancel his summer camp program, which he loves, but these attempted wake-up calls fail to wake him up. Do you have any suggestions? All right, so your thoughts on this. Hey, guys. There you go. What's that? There is, isn't there? A lot worse things.
It does kind of make you wonder, though, what the communication is about his responsibilities when he goes to college. Like, is he, you know, I mean, obviously, if you are going to be responsible for paying for your own college, there's going to be more motivation to have the better grades, to have scholarships.
Yeah.
And so, you know, is he expecting that his parents are going to pay a full ride college no matter what?
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yeah, we're not told, but it might be fair to infer that they probably will be, based on their attitude and based on what they're like. They see themselves as sort of the driving force in getting him to make, you know, good grades and succeed in college and all that kind of good stuff. So.
Even want to go to college.
Yeah. Let me get you guys a handout here. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, other thoughts on this one as I'm passing out sheets to those who just joined us? What, Micah?
Harsher than the expectations my parents had. And so wondering if Like, what do you do for a child to, so when they get to this point, they have expectations for themselves? I don't know what the answer is, but I guess that would be kind of what you would be aiming for. You know, most of us having the younger kids, like, what do we do now so that when our kids are 17, they have standards in place for themselves?
Well, and one of the underlying questions here is how important are good grades? Now this kid could have been me when I was in high school. Now my mom and dad were like these parents, although they were a little more successful than these parents seem to be. I was totally happy when I was younger. As I got older, I kind of joined in the motivation. But when I was younger, B or C is fine. You know, I had to work too hard to get an A. I could make A's. In fact, I could make straight A's. But I didn't like the work it took. It was just too hard. I'd spend all your time doing homework. I'd rather be out goofing off, you know. And my mom was like, for my parents, for me, a C was basically like an F. It was like, that was, oh my. And B, okay. Yeah, I guess we'll let it ride. So how important are good grades? How important is college? Yes, Michonne, you have a thought.
I'm not going to say that this is a recommendation necessarily, but for me, straight A's wasn't really an option, I don't think. But my parents were fine with A's and B's. C's were heavily frowned upon. Anything below that was quite concerning. Making money was a motivation for me. I was real big about making money. So
yeah.
When my parents decided to, try the tactic of really high amount of money for A's, very little money for B's, and then negative amounts for C's, where I would end up having to pay them, all of a sudden, if I were getting $30 an A for my sophomore, junior, and senior in high school, I turned into a straight A student and brought my GPA back up from where it was my freshman year of high school. And so
at one level, you would think your parents might view themselves as having been successful. They basically bribe you to make good grades.
They did.
Is that
I'm not necessarily recommending it, but they also knew that, that money for me would have been a good motivator.
So again, we come back to the question, how important are good grades? Well, good grades have value. They're right. I mean, it's going to help especially if you're on the college track. Of course, we've talked about the fact not everybody has to be or should be necessarily on the college track. Not everybody's necessarily capable of making straight A's, although their assessment is that their son's capable of it. And so he's not.
Let me speak towards that. I see the parents making a pretty important assumption that A, the child is unmotivated.
Yeah.
And B, that they are clearly capable of making straight A's.
Right.
Of course, this is a fictional person. We don't know who we're dealing with here, but
it's actually a real person.
Is it?
Yeah.
I would not rule out the
possibility
that they have misjudged the clearly capable side of it. Is there a problem that's beneath the surface on why they are struggling? If it is an unmotivated thing, that could be an issue of character. That could be an issue of skill. So I know the whole concept of initiative can just be a laziness problem, but it can also be I've never been taught how to do time management. I've never been taught how to that's right.
Yeah, and because we don't know the details, all we're given here is he is, quote, clearly capable of making straight A's. So if you grant
their
assessment,
their son's capability.
And I don't mind granting that just to raise the issue of, if you have a kid like this and he's not making good grades, but look at everything else this kid's doing. And in the great scheme of things, how important are grades compared to showing respect for others, not getting involved in drugs? You got to think about that too. There are priorities in terms of what's important and what's not. Again, I don't know. I can see some value in good grades. I think most parents want their kids to make good grades, especially if they're capable of it. And especially some families are real oriented that way. The parents have had a good education, or they didn't have a good education and they really resent not having gotten one. By golly, they're going to make sure their kids get it. Yeah, I've seen both of those. My parents were kind of that way. Neither of them went to college, and they felt like not having college hurt them, and they wanted to make sure we didn't have that disadvantage that they felt like they had. So they were really driving, you know, for us to do that. Y'all welcome to say anything else, but it's one of those things that I think maybe my own perspective is, I wanted my kids to make good grades. I almost didn't quite want to bribe them, you know, like what your parents did. In fact, we may have gone that way for a short time, but so what I did was something almost like bribery by another name. I said, I wasn't going to punish them if they, if they made really bad grades, I might, you know, get on their case for not living up to what I knew they were all, my kids were all capable of straight A's, or at least especially Jason was, and the older ones. But what I would do is I said, well, if you make really good grades, we're going to celebrate. And we planned some really fun outing. And I said, I'm paying you for getting good grades. We're just going to celebrate the fact that you got good grades. Somebody might say, it's playing with words. I don't know. I wanted to talk about it differently. I didn't want to make it look like we were bribing them. That bothered me. I didn't want to do that.
I will say, though, that once I hit college and I realized, you know, through those couple of years that, unbeknownst to myself, like I thought that wasn't possible, but once I realized I can make straight A's, I was very motivated in college.
Yeah.
To keep a 4.0 as long as I could. And you know, I wasn't getting paid at that point.
Right.
But it turned into a self-motivation once I realized that I had the potential to actually strive hard and do it. That doesn't justify the bribery factor.
Well,
that's not a route that we would take because, I mean, frankly, we didn't have the idea of, if he doesn't get scholarships, then we're going to end up paying for his education. Well, I'm sorry, kid, if you don't get scholarships, then you're basically deciding that you're going to have a trade skill as a job
or
something else that's not going to be the college route.
Yeah, and that's the point that Karen kind of raised early on.
So when they say that they're using the incentive of college options, and it's in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
Are we saying that college options is the primary motivation for why we should excel in our studies?
Well, apparently in their mind it is. I don't know that it was in mine. And in my mind, with my kids, I wanted them to be the best they could be. And if they were not working hard enough to make good grades, then they probably weren't learning what they should be using this valuable time to learn. So. Of course, eventually went to homeschool and didn't win any grades anyway, so that's another whole thing. So, but I was like Michonne myself. My parents, even though I was more parent-motivated when I was younger, by the time I got to college, I had adopted their values. And I remember dropping a course. I would rather have a withdrawal because I was going to get a C in that class. And the teacher was freaked out because almost everybody was flunking that class. He was a very, very hard teacher. And I was one of his star students. I didn't realize this, but he considered me one of his star students. When I withdrew, he made a point to get in touch with me and said, why are you dropping my class? I said, because I'm getting a C. I'm having a heck of a time, you know. And he said, a C? That's great. You know, you want to see the grades that the other kids are getting. I said, well, I don't care about the other kids. I don't get C's, period. And he was just bewildered by that. I had bought into my parents' values, basically, at that point, better or for worse. Anyhow, it's just something to think about. I'm not going to try to lay down any real definitive answers on this because the Bible doesn't particularly talk about making grades. You'd have to draw on wider principles, obviously. The being the best you can be idea and all those kinds. Even those are very broad principles that can go a lot of different ways. But I would say in the case of this kid, they have a lot to be thankful for. And maybe a little overdoing it when it comes to the grades, though I don't begrudge them wanting the kid to make good grades, you know. So we're going to show a video next, and this ends up, interestingly enough, being a conversation between a father and daughter on her grades. So it kind of fits in. Let me get it lined up here. This is almost painful for me to watch, just because we're dealing with older kids now, and it's, of course, it was painful to watch some of the other ones we watched, but.
I appreciate you calling. Just let me know of the progress, and then we'll go from there. But again, thanks for the call, and talk to you later. Bye. Hey, can I talk to you, please? coach and teacher on the phone. Is there anything you need to tell me?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Your math teacher informed you that you're failing his class.
He hates me. He's doing it on purpose.
Yeah, it's not that you're lazy or irresponsible. It's just your math teacher's fault.
Dad, I don't understand. I'm trying really hard.
All right, so you're trying real hard, but your math teacher hates you and is failing on purpose. Which one is it? And you really are irresponsible. I mean, take a look at your room. It's a pigsty.
What the hell is my room to do with anything?
It's everything. It's the foundation of you as a person.
Dad, what the hell are you talking about?
Your room is what defines you as a person.
No, it doesn't.
Hey, I'm so sick of your attitude. I don't even understand why you're being like this.
Of course you don't understand me. Nobody understands me. I'm alone in this world. Everybody hates me. Nobody likes me, and it sucks.
So everybody hates you, and life is just so difficult for you. All right. Wow. Tough. You know what? If you think it's tough, why don't you go and find a job, put a roof over your head, pay your insurance, pay a mortgage on this house, get these lights going, and then you'll find out how difficult it is.
Ugh, you hate me!
Hello? Okay, I understand. We all make mistakes. Thanks for calling and letting me know. Haley.
What now? Am I failing English too?
No, that was your math teacher calling.
What now? Do I talk too much in this class?
No, he called and told me that he looked at the grades wrong. It was incorrect what he told me earlier. That he didn't get the B and not an F.
Well, I think you might have been positive.
No, your room's still on that scope.
All right. I don't know about you. That was just, that whole thing was painful for me to watch, just the way it was handled and the way the kid responded. Anyhow, what your thoughts on any of this, how that was handled, how the kid reacted, the issue itself? Hard to know where to begin, I suppose.
Well, the dad didn't seem prepared in the lecture he was going to give. As soon as he got off the phone with the teacher, he engages the daughter, and I would think he would probably want to give himself some more time to think about it and to formulate his thoughts. I think he was just shooting from the hip in making his case, and he wasn't doing a good job.
So, okay, go ahead, Michonne.
I'll go ahead and finish that.
What's that?
I was going to go ahead and finish on that.
That's all.
Were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, well, other than their dated cabinets,
that's the first thing I noticed too. No.
Wow. Well, first thing that I kind of noticed was the whole trying, you know, if you're going to deal with issues, you need to deal with them one at a time instead of just throwing it all in there to say, well, you know, here's a problem, here's a problem, here's a problem, here's a problem.
Uh-huh.
Trying to formulate your case based on all of these different issues that are going on, and it just, yeah, it's not going to be helpful. That kind of approach is not helpful at all, other
no.
than to try and say, I win.
That's, I think, basically how that guy seems to be looking at. Of course, this is an active script. Now, this is fiction, but again, it resembles reality in far too many households, I'm sorry to say. I mean, I have seen this kind of behavior on the part of parents and kids, and it's very painful. It's not what I would want for anybody in this room. As your kid, most of your kids aren't that old. The ones that are not like that.
He was more offended than he was concerned about his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I mean, he, you know, what some of the, I mean, it's one thing, you know, we've talked about already with the other article, being concerned about grades, and obviously it's something he would need to talk to her about, and he's within his rights and even within his responsibility as a parent to address the issue. But that's about where it ends, because it seems like my thought is that his whole approach to this thing was just to sort of berate her and to basically tell her you're worthless and it shows in every area of your life. And that may even be some truth to what he was saying. Maybe her room, her lack of discipline in her room and her lack of discipline in school probably are related. But making that connection the way he did it is a huge mistake, in my opinion, as a parent. You don't, as somebody said, I forget what you, deal with it as separate issues, number one. And number two, you really want to avoid, I think, as a parent, a sort of berating approach to your kids where you're just, you're scum. You're worthless. You're lazy. That's horrible. You want to call your kids out on things they do wrong. But if you caricature them or characterize them as being across the board a certain way, even if it tends to be somewhat true, I think you're just going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because kids will just be fine. Yeah, that's right. Nobody understands me. Nobody likes me. Nobody, that doesn't justify the kid's response. You want to see the kids be more mature, but they're kids. And if you go handle them that way, that's the way they're going to respond. A bad, bad move, I think.
I think, too, what Tim was saying, it does apply the thought process going into it. Like what was his objective? Was it to find out why the grades were bad, to hear her side of the story, to be able to compare? There apparently is a problem here. Or was it just to poke a finger at her and accuse her? In my mind, when they reach a certain age, there comes along where you really want to show by example of you show respect, you
yes.
listen to each other, you sit down and have a conversation where you control your temper, you learn to control your temper, and we talk and you listen. Listen to what her side of it was. She needs to listen to what her father's side is, saying what the teacher had to say, and then come up with what is the solution to it.
Right.
So if he says your grades are bad, then are you struggling with it? Where are you struggling? What can you see are some ways to improve it? Instead of it, like you were saying, you pulled in the whole thing. Well, your character, everything across the board, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
So in her, she went on the defensive. Of trying to protect herself from being torn down. And so then everything blows up.
Yep.
Becomes a big deal.
And he did start off asking questions, but they weren't really questions. He was so much... the first question, I don't know if you've... I've watched this many times, so I remember it probably better. But you remember what his first question was?
Do you have anything to tell me?
Hmm?
Do you have anything to tell me?
Yes. What was he trying to do there, you think? Huh? Yeah. This is a parental technique, and it's crafty, but I'd be careful with it. I don't even really recommend it. I think what he may be doing is he's trying to fish. He's got something, and he's going to bring it out and show her he has something. But before he does that, on the face of it, looks like he's just giving her a chance to come clean before he has to confront her with it. But it could be that at one level, what he's trying to do is try to get some kind of confession, like, well, yeah, my friends and I have been not taking drugs or something. Oh, really? Now he's got two things to go after, So he's fishing. He's on a fishing expedition.
He mentioned that was the math teacher on the phone, Ben Diaz. So,
say that again, I'm sorry.
I thought he mentioned before that was your math teacher.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, okay, so, yeah, maybe not drug problem. Maybe, I'm doing something wrong in math class or whatever.
He also seemed to give more understanding to the math teacher's mistake of looking at the grades wrong.
Yes.
And his own daughter and the potential mistakes that she's making in class.
What about the daughter's attitude? Now, because the guy is so unreasonable, it's almost like we look at the daughter and say, whoosh. Gosh, I understand how she responds, and I guess at one level you could say that. But would you want your kid to have that kind of response, no matter how you behaved? I mean, she was disrespectful left and right.
She'd have a mouthful of soap after using that.
Yeah, I mean, but that doesn't start overnight.
I really think that comes from the parent a lot.
It does.
Always, that when we disrespect our kids, that's what they learn, and they're going to talk to us like that.
Yeah.
Or even when we disrespect each other.
That's true also. So there's a lot going on in a situation like that. And if you were going to try to turn that ship around, I mean, you know, we're not even thinking he's a believer, but if he became a Christian and wanted to start parenting better, it would take a long time to turn the boat around. It really would. But he would have to try to do that.
I also see him being reactive to grace, but not proactive to the messy bedroom.
Yeah.
And if the bedroom was a big deal to him, he would have dealt with that long ago.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And he would have dealt with it in an even-tempered sort of way, you know, and said, hey, first of all, sit down and talk to her about it. Like, let's talk about your room, why it's important. Of course, the idea that it characterizes who you are, or it, how did he put it? Do you ever remember the phrasing he used? I'm not getting it quite right. It's your room basically
defines
is...
Defines you.
That's it. Defines you. No, it doesn't. I mean, it may reflect on you, but it doesn't define... That was a too strong of an overreach on his part, I thought. All right, well, I've got a couple more videos. Now, this is in a series that was offered online. Again, I don't even know where these actually come from, other than just YouTube. But this is clearly being offered by a group that's wanting to suggest parent behavior that's not helpful and parent behavior that might be a little more helpful, at least, or maybe even good. So what they're going to do is they're going to show you three different scenarios. We're going to break them down one at a time. And they'll show you scenario number one, they'll show you going badly. And then they stop it. And then they have the same scenario occur again, but they show it going well because the parent handles it differently. So that's the intent of the video. What we'll do is we'll stop after each one and have a response to it. If I can get this thing to close.
Mom, can I use the car tonight?
For what?
I want to go to the movies and pick up my friends.
No, no way. No way you're taking my car with a bunch of disrespectful teenagers.
That's so annoying. You never let me do anything. Do you even want me to have friends? You say you know everything.
Okay, they're real short. Thoughts on that one?
There's so much we don't know.
but what we see. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's so much we don't know. But speculate about what you don't know, if it's this, if it's that, if you want to go that route.
She hasn't learned how to make a biblical appeal in the right way of admitting or acknowledging the mother's authority.
Right.
But Mom, would it be okay in coming up with a compromise and listening to both sides of the story of why is it not okay to understand the rule, but the mother and not saying anything else except for, you know, you got hooligan friends.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's, I mean, the whole approach set the whole thing off, which is what they're really trying to prove with this. Yeah, Micah.
In the last video, you mentioned how it was bad timing for the father to talk about the room necessarily, and I saw the same thing in this one. Like, that's not the right time to bring up the fact that you don't like all of her friends. Like,
yeah,
all of her friends are
you're right.
That's a different problem that you should have already addressed.
Yes. So what you got is you got parenting, bad parenting going on, and then they wait till a crisis, and then they want to dump the whole thing on them. And of course, and you're right, the way the daughter responds also is bad. The whole thing becomes bad.
Some of those same words could have been interpreted differently if the tone of voice was different.
Boy, that's right. That's exactly right. Tone of voice is so critical.
I mean, maybe there is a legitimate concern about these disrespectful friends, that if the mother had, you know, in a non-provocative way, humbly, you know, I have concerns about your friends.
Yeah.
But like the other examples from last week, kind of the role playing and pulling out, it would be using that, like, well, what about, you know, have her list the friends. So who all are you picking up? And then start asking questions. Do you think that this person, make the daughter admit what she sees as being bad character, so it's coming out of her mouth, not the mother's mouth, but making the daughter start to think
along yeah. those lines, to acknowledge that, okay, this probably wouldn't be the best idea to hang out with this individual at that time, without it becoming this pointing fingers, accusing, and just, you know, the no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's watch scenario number two, because we got a couple of these to go through, and I don't want to, we may run out of time, and if we do, okay, no biggie. But here's the same scenario played out with a little better result, or maybe a lot better result. We'll see what you think.
Mom, can I use the card tonight?
Probably, that's fine.
I want to go to the movies and pick up my friends on the way.
Well, I appreciate that you came home on time the other night, and as long as you guys are respectful to my car, I don't have a problem with it.
I'll make sure they are. That's all good.
Okay.
Have fun. Thank you so much, Mom.
Yes.
Okay, so assuming we're not going to see another scenario played out by the same
people, we're not.
I would probably much rather have seen the scenario to see where, just because she asked kindly doesn't mean the answer was going to be yes.
Right.
I'd like to have seen the scenario where it's like, the answer is still no.
But she does it a better job of
it. But she does a better job.
I agree.
Conveying that.
Right.
And the, you know, the daughter perhaps doesn't use a manipulation, a guilt trip, just because she didn't get her way. How do you?
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that too. And you know, of course, you'd have to see what the reasons were.
Because according to this one, it was just a complete non-issue altogether. It was more nonchalant of, can we get the car? Well, if you're respectful, sure.
Sure. Well, not only that, but she threw him some compliments. Well, okay, trying to get yeah. you to, you know, I really appreciate you came home on time, you know, or whatever it was she complimented her for.
The same thing on the flip side, because she said no because of this, and this time she said yes because of something else.
Yeah.
It had to do with whether she was able to drive the car with her friends or not.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
In both of the first two scenarios, both the parents and the kids, they seem very comfortable arguing like that.
Yeah.
But it's not the first time they've done that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you get to that point, and I'm praying that none of you will, but if you get to the point where you're finding you're in that kind of a relationship with your older son or daughter, something has already gone wrong and is a much, much bigger problem than the thing that's presenting itself at the particular moment that you're having the argument. Much, much bigger problem. And we don't want to get to this point.
I've got a 4-year-old IQ, and I can already see what their teenage life is going to be like.
I see that a lot of times too with younger kids. You're just pained because you know where that's going to go. It's tough, and I've been in these scenarios, and I've had it with my own, especially my older kids. We got to that level. Of course, I didn't tolerate it, and you know, but man, it's tough turning that boat around. I'd like it to turning around a huge battleship, because this doesn't happen like that.
I did like how she started in her response. A question was asked. She said, "Probably, what's going on, or what's the plan?"
Yeah.
So she's not agreeing, but she's saying, "Hey, there's a potential. I will be in the affirmative, but I need to know more."
Yeah, yeah. Not only, in fact, there's a probability that she'll be in the an affirmative, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting in both scenarios. The question was asked basically in the exact same way. The response was what was important. It's kind of similar to an interaction you have when you get pulled over by a police officer. They usually ask the exact same question every time.
Yeah.
Why are you going so fast? Where are you headed to?
Yeah.
You know how fast you were going. It's your response that dictates the rest of that, you know,
how that plays out.
Counter. So although the police officer is trained to defuse any situation, the parents also are supposed to be the example and not respond with, you know, whatever she might have been working on. Bills or whatever, you can't respond. Frustrating attitude to your kids.
Yeah.
Kind of see the parallel there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we do set the tone in a lot of ways. Andre brought that point up earlier. You know, it's just as parents. And again, the kids are accountable. Always. But we're accountable. And there's two things going on there. We have to always be aware of that. So let's see. Here's another scenario. Goes bad first.
I've asked you 4 times already to clean the kitchen. I'm busy. I'm so sick of this. You know, you have your friends come over here and you guys make a mess and you're not doing anything about it. No, forget it. I'll just do it.
Shut up, busy.
How about that one? Short but ugly.
What did the daughter learn in that scenario?
What's that?
So what did the daughter learn in that scenario?
Yeah.
Nothing, really.
Well, no, actually she did learn something.
She did. Well, she learned, yes, you're right. She learned that if she doesn't do anything...
Mom's just going to throw a little hissy and whatever, and, right. and she gets to sit there probably in judgment thinking, yeah, whew, Mom just lost it, gee whiz, you know. Yeah. So, not only does she not have to do it, she gets to even say, Mom's basically a fool or an idiot.
Yeah.
All bad things, all very bad things.
Well, I'll confess that scenario plays out often.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the impatience to wait for the child to do the work, and it would be so much easier just to take care of yourself. But I guess the parent has a responsibility to learn the patience required to train the child as long as it takes them to do it.
That's right.
Get it done.
Yeah, you learn that early on, don't you?
We're working.
Yeah, I mean, with the little kids, it'd be so much easier to do the job yourself. I mean, you could do the job 10 times by the time you taught them to do it once, and then even then, you would do a better job and probably even had to come behind them and do a few things just because they're just not there yet. But
then it falls on us because we're not following through with an obedience issue. If I told you to do it, why did it have to wait 4 or 5 times? It should have been after the first time I told you, and you still sat around and disregarded what I was saying. That's direct disobedience.
Yeah.
And there are consequences for it.
That's right.
And that wouldn't have been in the bud, so it never would escalate to this. So shame on us that we get to that point of the frustration of you still haven't done it, and then instead of correcting it at the beginning, it's gone on and escalated.
Yeah. Andrea?
And for an encouragement on that, you do it well now, you're going to reap such good benefits later.
Well, that's right.
When you're older and capable, you can just, you don't even have to tell them to do it. They know, and they can, and it's done, and you're so pleased.
Yeah, and that's just something that y'all raising the younger ones. If you are being negligent at this point, and you know that that's causing your problems, those problems are going to come back in spades when the kids get older. It only gets magnified even larger. We should do a good job because we know we should do a good job. But a little added incentive if you don't. You will have some very, very, you think your toddler gives you trouble, or you think your young child gives you trouble, just wait until they become teenagers. You're going to have a nightmare that is unrivaled, more than likely.
What are your thoughts on how to, from a parent's perspective, how do you handle the child's forgetfulness? Say in this scenario, she had said, once you finish with this, do this, and say whatever she was working on took an hour. And you forget, still disobedience, but as a parent, you gave her the boss, you know, it was, you had to know, understand that she could forget. Would you word your request differently for them to do this or that, not after you do whatever you're doing, because then you could easily come into a situation where you frustrate yourself and others.
Yeah.
Because they just forgot. Because it wasn't important to them, they didn't even want to do it in the first place, they might would have done it,
yeah.
But they forgot.
I know that was usually part of the deal with us, is not only did I give them something to do by direct assignment, but oftentimes I gave them things to do that were on a scheduled basis, so there was expectation for them to remember to do it as well as do it. And just handle it kind of like everything else. If I felt like there was negligence, or especially a pattern of negligence, I might let it slide a time or two while they're learning. But at some point I would have consequences involved and say, you know, we've talked about this, and you know, you continue to forget. I understand you got a lot on your mind and so on, you know, talk in a very respectful way and even make allowances, but the big butt comes along and says, it didn't get done, and I think we're going to have to kind of do something to reinforce with you. This is really important you remember this.
Well, you put things into a schedule, and that helps, but I know from my work I have things that I have to do, and I don't forget to do those things, but it's the random requests that I don't expect.
Yeah.
That if I can't get to them immediately, it's very easy to forget, even if you make a note of it. That's one of the situations, and if the person that made the request is one prone to anger if something doesn't get done,
yeah,
that's where I've learned to just get it done immediately, put off whatever you're doing. But
yeah, my expectation as a parent, pretty much, unless there was some reason that was not the case, for good reason, was if I've asked you to do something random or kind of brought something up and I expected you to get on it.
Yeah.
Do it now. All right. In fact, I played these for my son. He grew up at our house. And it's actually the next one, but he brought up one of my famous phrases that I've forgotten. I used to use all the time. Work first, play later. And he watched it. He went, work first, play later. He remembered. But let's watch the good scenario on this one.
Hey, can you help me out in the kitchen?
I'm busy.
Listen, I know you've had a really long day, and I've had a long day too, but when I come home and I want to make dinner in the kitchen's a mess, I just would like some help. Can you help me?
All right.
What about that one? Obviously, it went better. Yeah, the I'm busy was a problem, right?
And it sounds like the mother is begging. And I'm sorry, I have issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
As a parent, I should not have to beg my children to help lift a finger because I'm not going to cater to them for the rest of their lives. They're capable, well, semi-adults at that point. They should be able to help haul the load in the house, too. And hopefully I've trained that way. But, yeah, the mom sounds like she's almost timidly pleading. With like, well, let me give you, this is my reasoning behind it. And, you know, it's a really convincing reason. And
yep. Yeah, I think the battle was already lost before. Even
though
it went better. Huh?
She opened it up that pan with her question, would you come help me in the kitchen?
Yes,
you
yeah.
Help me. I need you to come help me in the kitchen right now.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And that's, you know, we've read several Roseman articles. That's his mantra, you know. Don't ask your kids to do stuff. Tell them, you know, basically. Or ask them in a way that you're basically telling them. Don't be like, will you do this? Or, because the answer can be no. Is that what you want?
You say work now, play later. I've heard somebody say to delay is to disobey.
That's true also, yeah.
You know, the I'm busy thing is a problem. You're not only you're being disobedient,
yep.
You're talking back, you're being defiant, and that is something to be addressed as well.
Yeah.
Our saying on that is delayed obedience is disobedience.
What, it's what?
Delayed obedience is disobedience.
Yes, that's same idea. Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, in the daughter's defense, if she's working on some type of a research paper that is due the next morning, the teacher had given it to them the morning of, and she is under great stress herself, the daughter needs to learn how to appeal.
Yes.
How to explain whether or not she's, you know, playing solitaire or if she's doing something.
Yeah.
Really.
Good point.
I mean, there could be a reason the kitchen is still a mess because we're working on triage situation and the dishes took second place to the research paper.
Good point. Yeah.
I have a cute story to go with.
Okay.
Just what little kids can understand. On Friday, I had three bigger kids. I told them to clean up, and they continued to play. And I said, you need to obey. And made them clean up. Well, the second time, I said, it's get ready to go to night-night. You need to potty. You need to clean up. They put on dress-up stuff and kept playing. So then I sent them to the corner and lectured them about ignoring me, blah, 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 blah. When I was done, the little one that just turned two walked over and she said, gotta obey.
She said what?
Three, gotta obey.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in the big lecture.
Right.
She knew why they were in time out.
She knew the bottom line, didn't she?
She did.
Yeah, that's great.
Our mantra is you don't work, you don't eat.
And if you don't eat, you don't play.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I'd say, fine, I'm not going to eat, I want to go play. You know, and that'll work for a while.
It all goes down, die.
I mean, that is very biblical.
Everybody does their share, even if you have something else that's really important, schoolwork or whatever. Everybody has to help pitch in order to
absolutely
make the house run to work. And in this situation, just even helping to prepare dinner that she's going to eventually eat just makes sense that she would set it down for 15 minutes to go pitch in and get the job done. That more hands, saying more hands make light work.
Yeah. Well, let me show the next two scenarios back to back, just in the interest of time, so we'll get a chance to kind of comment on it. Similar to the ones we've seen, but just kind of fleshes it out in a different direction.
What do you think you're doing?
I'm going out.
You're not going anywhere. You haven't done your homework and you haven't cleaned your room.
That's so annoying. Yes, I did. I did
Hey, you look nice. Do you have plans tonight? Yeah, I'm a little out. Just some friends.
You know, I really like that April girl. I'm glad that you're hanging out with her. But do you think you can be home by 9 o'clock so you can finish your homework and
clean your room? Yeah, that's totally fine.
I'm going to do that for you.
Bye.
That was the one where my son said, work first, play later.
I'm frustrated by the apples and oranges. Like, one scenario says,
right,
no, you will not do this. The other scenario says, yes, why? I mean, are all the problems still there that need to be addressed? But you're going to say yes just because you decided to compliment her at first and ask her questions and she responded well?
By this video, all these examples is saying, as a parent, if you let the kid do whatever they do, you're going to have less conflict.
That seems to be the message, doesn't it?
And she's, again, asking the child, are you okay with coming home at 9 o'clock?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of being the parent and saying, these are the rules you will obey.
I mean, I didn't really even like the, I'm going out. I mean, to me, you know, and maybe just the way I was raised, but I moved out of my house when I was about 19 years old, and my stepping stone to getting out of the house was there was a family in our church in the summer would go to a summer home, and they used to find somebody to house sit, so I house sat for them, and all I had to do was pay utilities, so it gave me a chance to kind of ramp up and get on my own and all that sort of thing. So I went over there the night before they left or something like that, and was kind of staying with them for a day or two, and they were kind of showing me around and so forth. And I went to go out somewhere, and I went to the dad and said, hey, would you mind if I go? And I asked him for permission to go somewhere. He wasn't even my dad. And he looked at me, he just kind of laughed. I thought, I guess I don't have to ask you that, do I? He goes, not really. I said, sorry, just a habit. I think it was actually a habit of respect that I had toward my parents. I mean, for all the, and we had some rough spots in our relationship. I'll make no bones about that. But they taught me that. And I think we ought to all teach our kids that. I didn't like the fact, I was offended the minute she walked in there and says, I'm going out. You know, like, you know, you don't have anything to say about it. It's just one thought.
Yeah, unless she'd given her prior notice that she was going.
Yeah, no, okay. And that could be, maybe we don't know, but I get the idea with this way these things are laid out, right, that there's way too much leniency and way too much or lack of management or mismanagement, both.
It doesn't seem like they have any previous guidelines on, what's allowed. You know, who can you take with you? Who can you go? When can you go out? And I don't know. Like at this age, like you don't want to really micromanage, but let me see your homework. Did you get it completed? You know, and that also helps with the. You should know here, or that phone call. You should know that your kid's going to get a phone call that they're failing.
Right.
So just knowing what's going on and having those expectations and guidelines in place, because then it's not necessarily, did you finish your homework? No. Well, you know the rules.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't even seem like there was that rule.
Right.
And she was willing to trust that it would get done later. In real life, how much do you want to bet that stuff wouldn't get done? At least not after several go-rounds like this, and then maybe not then. So that's why I had to work first, play later. It's human nature. I mean, I do that with myself, personally. I have something I want to do that's really fun, and I have something I know I need to get done. And now sometimes I'll let self-discipline slip, and I'll do the fun thing, and then I usually end up regretting it. But if I'm on my best behavior doing my best, personally, I'll do the hard thing first, work first, play later, because that's human nature to once you get the hard thing done, oh, sure, you're always going to go back and have a good time. But if you reverse it, that's not necessarily true.
It seems like in both instances, in the first instance, the mom has a lot of grudging against the daughter.
Yes.
And so in both instances, I don't like you, and I'm not going to give you what you want no matter what you say.
Yeah, that's right.
I do like you, and I'm going to give you what you want no matter what.
Yeah, two extremes. That's kind of what Michonne was having a hard time, and all of us did. I mean, that was the first thought I had when I watched it, too. It's like, oh, my.
It reminded of Ted Tripp, some of the examples that he gave in, his kids demanding or saying things like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you're on my team. You're such a loser. You're not good at this game. And the attitude that he had, that he displayed in response to them is in a very kind and loving way to say, but still authoritative to say,
look, I'm not a loser. You're not allowed to talk to me like that. I'm your father. I might not be good at this,
right,
but I'm still your dad.
Yeah.
And the point being is that in these scenarios, it's like the parent, the adult, is coming emotionally down to the daughter's level and becoming a child in how they communicate with them, rather than the expectation of maintaining, you're an adult, talk like an adult.
Yes.
An adult doesn't have to act like a child whenever, even when they don't get their way, when their child is not letting them get their way because they're disobedient.
Yeah.
And so...
Good point. Good point.
A lot of these examples was the daughter wanting to go out with her friends.
Uh-huh.
And so you're dealing with a teenager, not only are hormones involved here, but the sense of wanting to become more independent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just probably layers upon layers of factors. Even though, yes, what the parents says should go, but the solution to some of these could be a little bit more complex than, say, just dealing with a 4-year-old.
Yeah. But I just kind of wanted to get it out there, the bat of the round, to kind of give us an idea of some of the principles we see at work, and y'all bringing it up. Great. Yeah.
What Sean said about, you know, if a kid says, I hate you.
Oh, my, yeah.
We would pretty much deal with it that way. But sadly, so much on Facebook and comments and things,
yeah,
there's that belief, if your kids are mad at you and hate you, you must be doing it right.
Wow.
Oh,
I
man.
See that
yeah,
all
that's,
the time.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's horrible.
If they're not mad at you, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, no. If they have that kind of anger problem unaddressed, there's a lot of problems going on. And they really work, and you might need to get help, you know, from people who have been there or can help give you good advice.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to pull it back as quickly as you can, because that's a disaster for that to be the case.
A lot of adults who don't act like adults talking to other adults, so
yeah, you know, well, that's true.
We don't all grow up.
Yeah, that gets back, you know, what he was saying. We had a family counselor at one point, because we were having trouble with our older kids, and I've told you about that. And one of his repeated advice things that he always said to us, and it seemed like it's an obvious thing, he just said, keep it in the adult when you're talking to your kid. I relayed how the conversation went. He goes, okay, now it's really important when you're talking to your kid, keep it in the adult. And what he meant by that is, don't get down and act like a child and start, you know, because you'll get on their level, and they pull you into it if you let them. And you know, even I did that at times. And he had to keep saying, keep it in the adult. You know, be the adult in the room. Folks, as always, we've run out of time we're still in the middle of it. And not only have we run out of time for this class, but this is the last class. It really is. And next week we will begin a new subject. We're going to be looking at a subject which may not mean a thing to many of you, but I promise you it will be very, very worthwhile. Before I tell you what it is, it's a topic that when I was introduced to most of you, like all of you here, I think, are Calvinists. Before I understood Calvinism, or however you want to call it, Reformed theology or whatever, sovereignty of God, the Bible didn't make near as much sense to me. It did to some degree, but once I accepted that, all kind of passages opened up. And what we're going to get into next week is a subject like that. It's an overarching subject. And it has to do with it's called New Covenant Theology. And we're going to just start from the beginning. We'll look at the covenantal structure of the Bible. And the Bible is written around covenants. We'll talk about what those are and so forth. So it's going to be more theological than this class, but I promise you it will be very practical in the end. And I'm going to keep the format that we've kept up till now, where I will lecture for some time, and then I want to get some interaction from y'all. That seems to have worked well. This is actually kind of new for me to do this. I've usually either led small groups where it was all interaction, or I've led a class where it was just me speaking and maybe take a question or two at the end. I'm going to try to encourage more questions. So the same format, if you like it, I think most of you do, will be there. And give it a shot, even if you're wondering what's that all about. I'm not sure about it. I don't blame you. And as always, you know how I approach things. You decide, right? I mean, I'm going to try to present to you a biblical case, but I want to hear, you know, I want you to see it for yourself, or show me that I'm not seeing it and in a, you know, a good way. So we're going to have some helpful interactions, I think, and hopefully this will be very helpful to you all. So let me close in prayer. Father, we just thank you for this time. Thank you for this whole series. Almost feel sad to see it go, but I'm looking forward to moving ahead into other areas, and I do pray that this will continue, the parents are still going to continue to be parents, that they would be able to carry forward some of the things we've talked about here, that there would continue to be encouragement from fellow members on the subject, even though it's not being discussed formally in a classroom setting. And just pray for everyone here that they would not end up with their young children becoming like what we saw in some of the videos today, but that they would grow up respectful and honoring to you and loving you and loving their parents. That's all of us, what we really want. In Christ's name we pray, amen. You're dismissed.